Let's reflect for a minute on the kindness of sentient beings and how everything we know, everything we have, all our talents and abilities, just staying alive, how all of this is due to the kindness and the efforts of countless other sentient beings. And in this way, generate the wish to repay their kindness. And think of how you can do that. And in that way, generate the wish to become a fully enlightened Buddha, to repay their kindness by showing them the way to full enlightenment, the way out of the unsatisfactory conditions of cyclic existence. And with that motivation, that's why we're going to listen and discuss today. Of something yesterday that I forgot to mention. Oh, I better get plugged in. Okay. So something from yesterday that I forgot to mention was this thing about reducing attachment to our body in the mandala offering that we make before teachings and that you often do in your daily practice, besides offering the universe and everything around it to the Buddha, there is a visualization of transforming our body into that universe and offering that. And that's called the inner mandala. And that's quite effective for reducing attachment to your body. So if you find that you have a lot of attachment to your body, either, you know, not wanting to separate from it when you die, or worrying about what other people are going to do to it after you die, then to help free you from that attachment, add on the visualization of the inner mandala and offer your body to the Buddha. Okay? So in that visualization, if you know the visualization for the external mandala with the Mount Meru, the center mountain, and then the four continents around it and the eight subcontinents and all the various different attributes of it, then your skin, you imagine, becomes the golden ground, and your torso is Mount Meru, especially your stomach. And the sun and moon are your eyes, and the umbrella and parasol are your ears. And the seven circles of golden mountains are your intestines, and the oceans and seas are your blood and lymph and these kinds of things. And then all the four continents are your hands and feet, yeah, two hands, two feet. The eight subcontinents, your upper and lower arms and your thighs and calves. And all your internal organs are all the beautiful offerings in the sky above. And so by doing this visualization and imagining, you know, you're just taking out the parts of your body and transforming them into the external universe, and then you offer this to the Buddhas, then, you know, first of all, you're taking apart your body, so you're seeing that there's nothing really there to start with. You know, and then you're offering all of that to the Buddha, so then it no longer belongs to you, and you have to use it for the benefit of sentient beings, that you realize that there's nothing there to cling on to, and so that's quite freeing. Okay? And then if you ever happen to do the take the initiation for the Vajrayogini practice, in there, there's one offering called the Kusali offering, where you imagine, you know, taking off your skull and using that as a ball, and then chopping up the rest of your bodies and putting it in there, and then transforming that all into a jewel bowl of full of wisdom nectar, which then you offer to the gurus, to the three jewels, to all the sentient beings, to the protectors, and especially to those who have ill feelings towards you. Okay? So that too becomes very effective for freeing us of attachment to this body, because attachment to the body at the time of death is a big difficulty. You know, and it's a big difficulty during the time of life, too. Okay? So those are some practices that are very helpful for that. Okay, then, you know, if we're going to talk about how to help people when they're dying. So, first of all, in the weeks or months before they die, then express your positive feelings for them, not in the way of making them attached to you, but just in a way of expressing what you need to express to people who are dying, and if you're dying, to tell the people you care for that you care about them. Because sometimes the people that we value the most in our lives, we don't bother to tell them how much we care about them and how important they are to us. We just kind of take them for granted. So it's important, if we're dying or if the other person's dying, to express these kind of sentiments. But again, not in the sense of, you know, oh, you're the one and only, and I'm going to miss you when you're not here. Because that kind of thing is not at all helpful to anybody. Okay? And then encourage people who are actively dying to share their kindness with others. Okay, so to express their positive feelings, to be generous, like we were talking about yesterday. Help them remember all the love and kindness that they have received from others and that they've shared with others, and also that they have given to others. Okay, and again, stay clear of attachment. But really help them to see that they've received a lot of love and kindness during their life, and they can feel good about that. Okay. Then encourage them also to remember the beneficial things they've done in life. Okay, so specific acts of generosity, or when they've held very good ethical discipline and haven't wavered from that, even in difficult situations, or times when they've been incredibly kind and patient with people who have not been acting so nicely. So to really, you know, help them get in touch with the positive things they've done in life, so they have a sense of rejoicing about their life. Because it's very easy, as death approaches, to just have a lot of regrets, or I should have done this, I should have done that, you know, but instead help them have, you know, a good feeling about their life. On the practical side, encourage them to, you know, have their advance directive made, to have, give spiritual directions to you, to others, you know, to especially the family, the people who are going to be very involved, and to make a will, so that way, when they pass away, they don't have to think about any of those things. They've thought about them, decided it before, and they can put it aside and let go of it. So encourage them to do that. Of course, you know, sometimes you meet people who are not ready to do that. They do not want to face the fact they're dying, and making a will means you're dying. Okay? So, you know, all you can do is say, oh, it might be helpful to other people, you know. We're not saying you're going to die or anything like that, but it might be helpful to other people if you do this. Because sometimes people will not do it for their own benefit, but if you say it's helpful to others, they will do it. Okay? And so it is with a lot of these things, you know. You want to encourage them to apologize, but again, they may not want to apologize. So then you have to think of how to skillfully encourage them, you know. Oh, if you have any things that maybe you, not that you have to apologize, but maybe you don't feel so good about having done some things. Okay, so you might have to use vocabulary that maybe is a little less threatening to them, because some people are very proud and they never apologize. Okay, but if you say, oh, maybe there's some things you don't feel so good about having done, and it's good to just mention that to the other person to clear the air. Or write a letter to the other person. You don't even have to talk to them. Write a letter to them, just clear the air. Okay? And in the same way, if they're holding grudges, to encourage them to forgive. And so, again, some people, they may not want to. And so you have to talk about the benefit of doing it. You know, oh, it's no sweat off your back to forgive this person. It's no sweat off your back to be kind to this person. Yeah, and I was saying this to a family member recently. I was going to meet some relatives he didn't like. And said, you know, it's no problem for you to be nice to them. He said, yeah, I don't care about them. I said, that's okay. You can still be nice to them. It's no problem for you to be nice, you know. Kind of just you know, don't create a stir. Not that anybody ever listens to my advice. You know, you try. Okay. You know, some people, they want you to be very direct with them about what their medical state is, and some people don't. And so you have to see who you're dealing with, you know, and you can ask them quite directly, you know, do you want me to be frank with you about your medical state, or do you just want to kind of see what happens as we go along? And then they'll tell you. Yeah? Because certain people, if the doctor gives them a certain prognosis or tells them they have a certain disease, they just lose all hope and they degenerate after that. Okay? Because of the way their mind works, not necessarily because of the way their body is. But then other people function much better if they know exactly what the doctor is saying. You know, of course, you always have to remember that although doctors give predictions, it's like anything. You don't know what's really going to happen until it happens. So, you know, this is just a prediction. It doesn't mean this is really going to happen. We can work with the situation. Okay? So, because doctors give predictions, you may die sooner, you may die later. It doesn't really matter. It's going to happen at some time. So let's just prepare. Okay? If people express to you regrets that they have in their life, then just listen with kindness and say, you know, kind of repeat back to them what they've said to you. You don't need to take sides in the whole thing. Saying, yeah, you know, you really did all act really bad. You know, or saying, no, that wasn't your fault, it was the other person. You know, just listen and say, you know, I hear that you have a lot of regret about some things that happen in your life, you know. And so just extend some loving kindness now to those people who, you know, you feel that you have regret about, and just keep extending your loving kindness to them, and in that way, soothe your emotions and let it go. Don't hold on to it, you know. Don't feel guilty. Because regret can be something positive, but guilt is not positive. So, you know, you want to pull them out of their guilt you know, make them see, okay, you can forget. You can regret, but you know, don't hold on to it and beat yourself up about it. Clear up your relationship with that person. So if you have any undone business. You know, it's good as much as you can to clear it up. But of course, sometimes other people are not ready to listen, you know, or they're hurting too much and they don't want to talk about it. And so you just have to accept the situation, you know. But sometimes you can try your best to clear things up. And sometimes clearing things up involves talking about specific incidents that happened in the past. And sometimes the best way to clear it up is not to talk about those incidents, but simply to express positive feelings towards the person so that they remember that, you know, their closing feeling is that you have a positive attitude and some affection towards them. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to go through, you know, well, 20 years ago you said this, and then I said this, and you said that, and I felt this, and you felt that, and then, I mean, because who wants to go through all of that? You know, when you're dying, you need to focus your energy on leaving this life, not on rehashing old stuff that should have been dealt with 20 years ago. Okay. Encourage other family members to express kind feelings and to clear up anything they need to clear up. Be very aware that, you know, in crisis situations, like, or just in the case of a terminal illness, people tend to, families, well, individuals tend to act with their, according to their old habits, because those are the strategies they've always employed to deal with difficulties. And families as a group tend to do the same. So all the behavior that has not worked all these years is going to reappear. Okay? And so just be aware of that, you know, that all of this could reappear, and don't buy into it. Yeah, don't engage with it. I had a very interesting experience with my mom dying about a year and a half ago, because I thought that when one of my parents died, the whole family was, that it was just going to be 100% chaos. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised that it was not, you know. I mean, people were upset and people cried and da-da-da, but there was no arguing. And it and people were very accepting, and I was completely surprised by all of that. You know, so it was a very pleasant surprise. You know, I mean, I was kind of prepared, because I'm the only Buddhist in the family, to be told, you know, we're doing it this way and that's it. And I would have said, fine, because the last thing you want in that kind of situation is for there to be any family conflict by you pushing your way and your agenda. So I would have just said, fine. But, you know, I did express, you know, oh, I would like to do some prayers. Well, the rabbi wouldn't let me do the prayers at the funeral, okay? So I went into the mortuary with my dad and my brother, and I did them there. And the family was happy about that. I didn't want to have a confrontation with the rabbi. I already know. Yeah, and it wouldn't have helped anybody, but I still got to do the things that were important. And lo and behold, my brother, much to my surprise, said, if I die before you do, will you do that for me? Which surprised me, you know, so much. You know, so also be aware that sometimes people really rise to the occasion and your old family things don't happen, so you don't be the one to make them happen. Yeah? So go in there with a really fresh attitude and an attitude of help, and really of, you know, I am not going to cause any friction or disharmony, because that's the bottom line, you know? I mean, what are people going to argue about at the funeral? Well, what kind of memorial service do you say? What religion is it? Does it really matter? You know, the purpose of whatever religion it is, and this is why, you know, I was prepared. I just didn't say anything about Buddhism at the memorial, although it was quite definite. I spoke, everybody knew. You know, the memorial service is to make the relatives feel good and to make the family feel good. So whatever is going to work for the majority of the people there, let them do it, you know? And, you know, when I got up and spoke, I didn't say one word about Buddhism, but what I talked about was Buddhism, because so much of Buddhism is just normal, everyday common sense. You don't have to mention one single funny word that people don't understand, you know? And one young man who came out for one of our youth weeks, he wrote me recently, and a relative of his died, and he was asked to speak at the funeral. They were having a Christian service. And he wrote me what he was going to say, and he said, does this sound okay? And again, it was completely Buddhist what he was talking about. You know, forgiving and kindness and affection for everybody and being generous and compassion. Not one word that, you know, gave away that he was a Buddhist. But it was all basic human kindness principles. Yeah. So if you're asked, speak about that. You know, you don't need to be shy thinking, oh, I'm a Buddhist, I can't say anything. You know, no, you talk about all these things that are common to all religions. And if you're asked to speak in a service, you say something that's going to inspire the people. Yeah? And, you know, you can even say, you know, death is a good reminder to all of us about our own mortality. And so let's spend some time thinking about what's important in our life and what's not important. And, you know, we always find that, you know, nobody expressed regret because they didn't work more overtime. But, you know, people do express regret that they weren't kinder to others. So let's all of us remember here to really live a life of kindness and forgiveness to others. And you talk like that, you know, and people are going to, they love it, you know, and it's something people of any religion can accept and people of no religion can accept. So you don't have to hide your Buddhism, but you also don't need to say, well, you know, this person is going to be reborn. We don't know. They created all this karma, and they have to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And, you know, forget all that. Yeah? Okay? So, you know, the real purpose is that we do what is going to benefit the majority of the people there. Okay? But, you know, that's why I think it's helpful if you want Buddhism to be explicitly mentioned and you want Buddhist prayers to be done at your bedside or at your funeral. It's very good to write that down and put it in a directive or put it in your will so that, you know, the family will know that, and then there won't be any dispute at the time of death. Okay? Because if you don't write it down, because death is never going to happen to you, then there's the result of that. In the same way, if you want people to make offerings on your behalf to the three jewels, you know, to your teacher, to the Sangha, to the Dharma centers, then you should put that in your will, you know, because that creates a lot of good karma. And your family, if they belong to another religion, are not necessarily going to do that. So if you want that done, it's good to put that in, okay? Because there is a custom of people, you know, doing pujas, you know, doing meditations, making prayers for people who are deceased. Some people want that to happen. Some people aren't so concerned, you know? But if you want that to happen, put it in, you know? And the same for how to distribute the things that belong to you. I mean, if the rest of your family is not Buddhist, they may take your Buddhist things and throw them in the garbage. Yeah? So you may want to say, give my Buddhist things to such and such a Dharma center. Okay? So just you know, so that it's easier for everybody. Okay? Then you want to encourage family members to do kind things for the dying person and to work through all of their own emotions. I remember one time being asked to go visit somebody who was dying, and I had to spend more time with the family than with the person who was dying because the family needed help processing their emotions. They didn't know how to do that. Okay? And, you know, all sorts of emotions come up at the time of death. Sometimes people are quite angry. Sometimes the family gets angry at the person who's dying because they're dying, as if they're doing it deliberately, you know? But people are not rational. They get upset about all sorts of crazy stuff, you know? So you have to talk to them, let them express what they're feeling, and discuss it. You know, some people, when they're dying, they are the ones that get mad at the universe. You know, I shouldn't be dying. Or they get mad at God. Or they think they're being punished. Or they think death is a failure. So then you have to listen to them. But then you also have to lead them to another way of seeing the situation so they can let go of those kind of wrong views. You know, and explain, you know, death is a natural process. It doesn't mean you failed. Everybody dies, you know. And it's not a punishment. It's just something that biologically happens to the body. Yeah. So that people can let go of some of these things. You know, and then sometimes people, as they're dying, they'll feel, oh, I'm totally useless. You know, especially if they have a terminal illness where they're not going to be able to be active for a while. They're going to feel like, I'm just useless, you know, I can't go out and do what I used to do. And then you explain to them, oh, doing things, you know, with your body, that's not the important thing. What you do with your mind, with your heart, that's what's important. Even if you're lying in bed, you can generate kindness. You know, you can teach them the meditation on metta, on loving kindness. And, you know, you can lie in your bed and just do this meditation on loving kindness. And you can teach that to people who aren't Buddhist. Or if they're Buddhist, you can say, you know, even you're lying down, you can imagine the Buddha. You can recite the Buddha's mantra and imagine light, you know, compassionate light from the Buddha flowing into you and filling your whole body and mind and purifying all negativities, bringing all the good qualities, making you very tranquil and relaxed. So, you know, they don't have to. Some people think, oh, I can't sit up in meditation position to do my practice. Doesn't matter. You do it lying down. Or they get scared. Well, the whole practice is too long. I can't do all this practice. That doesn't matter. Just do the visualization and the mantra. You know, and express your, you know, oh, I can't read the prayers. That doesn't matter. You express them in your own language. You express them from your own heart. Okay? So you just make it really easy and get, you know, and because, you know, practice isn't following some kind of recipe. It's, you know, what you're doing with your own mind. And so I really encourage people to do that. If a person, you know, is Buddhist, you talk about Buddhism. Yeah. If a person is Christian, you talk about Christianity. If they're Jewish or Muslim, you talk about those religions. So you put whatever you say in the context of the faith the person has. If a person has no religion, great, that's fine. You could just talk about loving kindness and forgiveness and rejoicing in ethical conduct and generosity and so on. Okay, so you talk the language of the person who's dying. If the family's a different religion, you know, or maybe no religion at all and the person is religion, then you talk the language of the family to the family, you know? Okay, so let's not get stuck in specific vocabulary that we're attached to, but let's be able to communicate important principles in whatever language is suitable to communicate. What's really important if you're helping somebody die is to let go of your own agenda. And this is very difficult. And this is where all the conflict with the family comes in, because everybody has their own agenda. You know, I want them to die at home. I want them to die in a hospice. I want them to go to the hospital. Then they fight. Okay. I want them to have morphine. They're in pain. I don't want them to have morphine. You know, then the people quarrel. I want them to die peacefully. I need my relative to die peacefully. But they aren't peaceful. They're agitated. Well, I gotta fix it and make them peaceful, even though they're not peaceful. How are you gonna do that? You know, you come in with your agenda of I'm gonna fix them. You are going to be peaceful when you die, whether you like it or not. Because I need you to be peaceful. So I am not listening to any of your rubbish. I am shutting it out and I am imposing my stuff on you so that you can die peacefully. That's violent, isn't it? You know, if somebody has junk to express, we have to listen to it. And you accept it, and you listen, and often just their feeling heard is sufficient for them to let it go. Because they may have been holding in things their whole entire life that they've never wanted to tell anybody. And finally, you know, they're dying. They need to say it. Yeah. And if you just listen and say, oh, I understand. Oh, I hear you. Then they feel heard. Or you repeat back to them what they said. You know, they feel heard. They let go. Yeah. Whereas if we have an agenda of you're not supposed to express any negative feelings because I need you to be peaceful, then, you know, we're making it so difficult for everybody, aren't we? Yeah. So, you know, sometimes people think, oh, I need techniques to hold people, to help people who are dying. Tell me what the techniques are, what I need to do. And I think the best thing we can bring a person who is ill or a person who is dying is just our presence. And our presence, the effect of our presence is going to depend on how we live, not on having techniques. Okay, but who we are as a person. Are we a person who can listen and accept? Or are we a person who has to fix everything and change everybody? Are we a person that has to have our way all the time? So this is the kind of thing that we bring with us that can often be a source of, you know, real discomfort for the dying person as well as for the rest of the family and the friends. Okay? Whereas if we are working hard in our own practice and have some level of acceptance, then we can come in a completely different way. Okay? That doesn't mean we stuff our own grief. Okay? But we also remember this person is only a karmic bubble. They are not real. There's nothing for me to be attached to here. You know? And instead of, you know what I think grief very often is and what mourning is you're mourning for a future that's not going to happen. You know, we don't mourn for the past because it's over and done with. We're not mourning for the present because it's happening. What we mourn for is we had our expectation for the future. We had our checklist of how the future was supposed to be and it's not going to happen. So we're mourning for something that doesn't exist. Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange when you think about it? We're not mourning for what is because we're losing what is. We're mourning because we're not going to have what never has happened. Okay? So to realize that and say, okay, you know, I had an expectation of how things were going to be, and that's not what's going to happen. But that's okay. I can be flexible. I can adjust. I can adapt. You know? and the future will be different, but I'm so fortunate for having known that person as I did in the past. And so you rejoice at the connection you have with them. Okay? You take that love that you've experienced with them, and then you go forward in your life and you share that love with whoever happens to be in front of you at the time. Okay? Instead of feeling, I can only love that one person and now they're not here. Who says that? You know, we want to, you know, we're practicing the Mahayana path. We want to create love for everybody. So let's not limit, you know, who we love by what we tell ourselves, you know, by incorrect ways of thinking. Okay? You know, let the person who's dying tell you how much pain medication they want, or if they want pain medication. They'll know, so listen to them. And sometimes what's very helpful is to give them the ability to control their own pain medication. Yeah? So instead of them having to call you or call the nurse or ring the call bell in the hospital so somebody else can give the pain medication, make it so that they can just press the little button themselves whenever they feel they need it. Okay? Because then when they don't need it, they won't use it. And when they need it, then they'll use it. And then the person feels empowered. Because I think a lot of the things that a dying person has to deal with is feeling disempowered. You know, because other people are making their decisions for them. Now, of course, sometimes the mind isn't so clear. Other people have to make those decisions for you. Yeah. But sometimes if your mind is clear, you want to have a say in your own care. And so it's important to give the person who's sick that ability to say what kind of care they want. And it may not agree with what kind of care you want them to have and you think you should have, that they should have. But that doesn't matter. You have to respect their wishes. Yeah. And I think this deals with, this pertains to elderly parents too. I mean, I've been going through this with my folks. And, you know, we want them to have one kind of care. They absolutely, positively refuse. And you know that the situation is an accident waiting to happen. And you accept it. Because they're making their choice of how they want to live their last days. And maybe they would rather live their last days, you know, feeling more empowered than live longer and feel disempowered. That is their personal choice. Yeah. So I think, you know, we can try and talk with them, but you have to leave that up to them. Of course, the issue I think that's really difficult is they're not driving. Because that isn't an issue that just affects them. That can affect a lot of other people. Yeah, so there you might have to be more insistent and, you know, talk to the doctor, get the doctor to tell them that they can't drive. Yeah. We kids were so upset, you know, because my dad had had a hip surgery and we thought, okay, now he's not going to be able to drive. And then the physical therapist told him he could drive. And we kids are going, this therapist, you know, what in the world are they saying? You know, it's so clear that he can't. So, you know, so it's good often to talk to the doctor, not in front of your parent, but, you know, and get the doctor to say it if they won't listen to you. Okay? And then, of course, when we get old and stubborn and people are telling us to stop driving, then we should maybe consider listening to them instead of being strong-willed and stubborn. Yeah. So you can understand how people feel, you know. As you lose the control of your body, you know, some people can do it gracefully, some people can't. And I think this is part of our practice of preparing for death, is, you know, to imagine losing control of our body and having to accept other people's help. You know, and some people, they do, you know, have such a hard time with that. And yet, you know, we're going to, if we live that long, we're going to have to do that. So how can we accept other people's help gracefully in a way that makes them feel good? Okay, because other people want to help us. If we refuse their help, they can feel hurt. How can we let their helping us, which we need, be an opportunity for the sharing of affection instead of us making it into a big ego thing? Yeah? Okay? Because it's true. I mean, at some point, we may need people to change our diapers. Yeah? And we may need to get used to the fact that we need to wear them. This is another thing that's been going on in my family, you know. And, you know, my dad, in fact, it's this weekend, you know, is traveling to see the rest of the family. And he said, it was his first airplane ride for a long time. And he said, oh, they're telling me I should wear these Depends on the flight. You know, they're crazy. And this is after him finally agreeing to use them, you know, at nighttime after us. Refusing for a long time. And I said, oh, Dad, but, you know, sometimes it's a bumpy ride and the pilot doesn't want you to get up. Yeah? And you're stuck in your seat. Because I just come from a flight where they did that to us. You know? And you can be stuck in your seat for 3 or 4 hours. So I think it's a good idea. He said, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. So, you know, that gave him kind of an out. You know? Especially if you say, oh, and I would actually want to wear some Depends in that situation myself. The pilot let us up. You know? So there's all kinds of ways that you can deal with these situations. Okay? But, you know, thinking ourselves, you know, how are we going to feel comfortable with other people dressing us? Mm-hmm. With other people cleaning us? With other people bathing us? You know? And how can we just relax and feel comfortable about that? You know? And then how can we feel comfortable, you know, taking care of somebody? Yeah? And then to often see if you're the right person to take care of them. I mean, I really saw that when my mom was dying. She didn't ask for my brother and me to come. You know, she asked for my sister-in-law to come. Yeah? Somehow it was easier for her. Also, I see with my dad, it's easier for him to have my sister-in-law, you know, help him with personal things than to have me help him. So I just know to step back, you know, let somebody else come in and do it. So it's just a thing of being sensitive to the situation and the other person's comfort level. You know, because some people want somebody they're close to help them with these personal things. For some people, having a stranger do it is much easier. So you have to see, you know, if somebody's dying, what are you dealing with? Okay. Also, don't insist that you've got to be there when they die. Yeah, some people are very insistent about this. I am not going to leave the room because they're on the verge of death and I've got to be here. And, you know, if you talk to any nurses, they will tell you that most people die at night when nobody's there. Why? It is easier. It's easier. You know, when you're dying, you don't want the family around you crying, holding your hand, pleading, arguing, doing who knows what. Either you want somebody doing spiritual practice and saying things to you that are going to guide your mind, or you just want silence. Yeah? And you don't want to have to deal with everybody else's emotion. So, you know, be sensitive to that, and don't insist that you have to be there, and don't feel like a failure if, you know, you're exhausted because you've been at the hospital all day and you go home to rest and they die when you aren't there. That's not a failure. That's not an indication of your lack of love. It's very often a gift to the person because they can just die peacefully without a big scene around them. Okay? And I remember seeing that one of my students was dying some years ago, and I came to be with him. And it was actually, I arrived in the morning, the family, his partner, all sorts of people had been there during the night. I arrived, they all went home, that's when he died, just when I was there, you know? So you just be sensitive and don't, again, put all sorts of, project all sorts of meaning on things that don't have a meaning, you know? Like, oh, they're going to be terrified if I'm not there. How do you know? Maybe it's more relaxing for them. Okay? So you have to be sensitive to the situation. And so all this, it means that we also have to get in touch with our own issues about death. Yeah. And our own inability to let go of people. How we think of them as concrete entities and won't let go. And, you know, it's much easier for the other people if we are able to let go, you know, and say, you had a wonderful life, we shared so much, I care about you. Take all that love, all your kindness, all your good heart, and go with that into the future life and share that with whoever you're with in your next life. And send them off in a really beautiful way that's affirming their good qualities. Okay? I think it's also good to have the room as quiet as possible. You know? If somebody's in the hospital, turn off the TV. Yeah? Turn off the TV. Turn off the music. Because these kinds of things incite so many emotions. And, you know, you can see that because people are falling asleep if the TV's on. They start dreaming about what's going on with the TV. Yeah? And that's very harmful for their minds when they're trying to die. Because there's always this crisis and violence and attachment and everything on the TV. So try and make it as peaceful as possible, yeah? And, you know, as calm. Don't cry in the room. If somebody's crying, you know, take them out of the room and console them outside the room, not in the room, okay? You can mentally give somebody a heartfelt hug when they're dying, but as they're dying, don't touch the body. Okay? Let them die without their body being touched. And then, just before you have to move the body, then you touch their crown and you tell them to be born in the Pure Land, or you tell them to take a precious human life. There's also sometimes pills that you can get, and you can crush them and give a little bit to the person to ingest if they can. Or you crush the pill and then mix it with a little bit of honey or yogurt and you put it on their crown. And you know, that draws attention there because hopefully you want the consciousness to leave at the area of the crown. It's kind of auspicious for a good rebirth. So that's also why you touch the crown when somebody's dying. Okay? Okay, sometimes you might have to remind somebody that the family's going to be okay. You know, everybody else is going to be okay. Or if somebody isn't there, then they happen to be asking about that person, say, you know, that person sends you all their love and they send you a big hug. You know, so just do what's necessary to comfort the person and bring some closure to anything that they don't feel closure about. Okay. I would also strongly recommend when somebody does not want any more tests, when they don't want any more treatment, don't force them. You know, again, that's our agenda. We have to know what virus they have, or we have to see if there's one last thing that we can do that is going to suddenly save them when they're clearly dying. Don't do that. You know, it's very intrusive. It's very disturbing for the person who's dying. Okay. What else? Recite, if the person's religious, recite mantras, recite prayers, recite whatever liturgy comes from their own tradition so that they can hear it. Don't do anything that is going to bring up old hurts and make the person distressed. Don't do anything that's going to bring up a lot of attachment and make the person cling. Okay? And then remember that you can't prevent anybody from dying. Yeah, sometimes we feel that I've got to prevent them at all costs. You know? We can't prevent anybody from dying. We have to accept it. Okay? Trust them in their process. And one thing that I didn't say earlier, but, you know, before people get to the point where they're actually dying, but, you know, much earlier on in the process where they're still quite coherent, if they're talking about financial issues, or they're talking about crises of faith, let them talk about whatever they need to talk about. It may not be your issue, but let them talk about it and help them resolve it. Okay? Because for somebody, they may have a whole issue about what's going to happen to all their possessions and money. For you, it's a non-issue. But for them, they need to go through that and process it to let go of it. Okay? So just whatever their issue is, deal with that. You know, don't tell somebody, you know, forget that. Yeah. Okay? After death, you know, then, like I said, before you move the body, the pill, if you have it, you put on at the time they are dying. Then before you move the body, you touch the crown. Try not to move the body if you can for as long as possible. Different states have different laws about this. Different hospitals have different laws. It's good to prepare in advance. Okay, so if somebody's in the hospital, talk with the doctor and the medical staff beforehand and get it arranged. Or take them home to die. If the hospital won't let them be there, you know, hospitals have to release you if you want to be released, don't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of my big fears is being caught in the clutches of the medical profession and them not, you know, but we got to do one more thing. We're not going to let you go. No, if you want to, you know, don't want to be in the middle of that, then get yourself released. And that you may have to make known beforehand so that your family knows that. Okay? So let the body be natural as much as possible. Sometimes you may see a little bit of blood coming from the nose or a little bit of white fluid coming from the person's genitals, that indicates that the consciousness has left. And after that, you can, you know, do what you need to do with the body. It's good to dedicate for them as, you know, pray for them as they're dying, dedicate your merit, and also after they die. And you know, dedicate for them to have a precious human life or to be born in the Pure Land, to meet perfectly qualified Mahayana teachers and have all the conducive circumstances so that they can practice. You know, send them off all your good wishes for them. You know, may you be generous, may you be kind, may you be free of worry, may you be free of fear. All your good wishes you ever had for them, verbalize those. And, you know, make the prayer that you have for your loved one your own prayer that's coming from your heart according to your wishes, you know, for them. And express those and, you know, say it out loud. You know, as the person's dying, whether you're in the room or not, after they die, You know, say it silently, say it out loud as you feel good to do. In the first few days after a person is dying, it's very good to really, you know, kind of make these dedication prayers and steer their mind, you know. Be born in a place where you can practice the Dharma. Have a kind heart. Don't worry about things. Okay? And to express that. And then the Buddhist custom is that on the 7th, 14th, 21st day, every 7 days, the day the person dies is counted as day one. Okay? So if they die on a Friday, day seven is a Thursday. Okay? So 7, 14, up to 49 days. On those days, then it's good to do special offerings, special meditations, so that you know, you create merit and you dedicate for that person. And the reason for that is that they say that if a person is in the intermediate stage, they usually find a body within a week. If they don't, then they have like a little mini death in the intermediate stage, and they take another intermediate stage body. And so at that point, if we're creating merit and dedicating it for them, that could influence their mental state, influence what karma ripens, and so that can be very beneficial for them. And so it's especially good if you are a close friend or relative to do those kinds of prayers and practices for that person. You can also ask, you know, your Dharma friends to do it. You can also ask the Sangha to do it for you. You know, make offerings on that person's behalf and request a puja. But also remember that you're the person who has the close karmic connection, so you really express your good wishes for them. Yeah.
Are there seven different bardos?
Different bardos, I don't know. If they take their next rebirth within 6 days of when they died, they're only in the bardo for 6 days and that's it.
And then they come from the little mini death.
Oh yeah. Then they're still in the bardo. Yeah, and so if their karma is altered, let's say they were going to take one body beforehand, and then the which karma ripens gets altered at that time, then they would take a bardo being resembling the new person that they're going to be reborn as. Yeah. Don't get superstitious about, you know, the people still being around. And so on. They are immersed in their experience. Yeah. And people in Singapore, because they really believe in ghosts and everything in Singapore, and their dead relatives coming back. And somebody told me this classic story of, you know, she was leaving the house at one point after somebody had died, and she tripped over a bucket and made some noise. And when she came back, you know, then the family was going, "Oh, so-and-so, you know, Grandpa was here. We heard him. He moved the bucket." And she's saying, "No, no, you know, I tripped over him." "No, no, you don't understand. Grandpa moved the bucket. We know he's still here with us, watching us." You know, and whatever she said, they wouldn't believe. Okay? So, just let things be. Yeah? Let things be. Yeah? You may feel the person's presence. Just dedicate with them and send them on to their next life with a lot of love. You may not feel the person's presence. It doesn't matter. Okay? Still dedicate for them in the same way. Yeah.
Any of this that wouldn't apply to an animal?
Right? No, I would do the same for an animal. Yeah, with the pill and touching, you know, touching their crown and being relaxed and not crying and getting hysterical in front of them, and, you know, not insisting that they go to the vet. You know, because that would be terrifying for a poor animal. They have no clue what's happening. You know, you take them to the vet, and then they have all these tests and things, you know, put in them, and they're freaked out because with all these new smells and new people and unfamiliar, it's not helpful to them. Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes when people are dying, their minds can become very agitated because they have a regret for something that they've done or upset somebody who's already died. Do you have some specific advice about that?
Yeah, okay, so somebody has some regret or unfinished business with another person who's already died, and now they're dying, then what I would do is encourage them to write a letter to the other person, you know, to put their to imagine that person and imagine that they're speaking to the best part of that person, and then just write down what they feel, you know, and write it down and express their regret, make their apology. You know, and we can all do that if we have regrets about, you know, something that happened with somebody who's already died. Yeah, and that can be very healing. Yeah? And then you imagine, or you write down how they would respond. And remember, you know, you wrote this letter to the best, most forgiving part of them, and so then you think of them responding from that part. You know, and forgiving and accepting and expressing their positive feelings. Okay. Good. So we have to stop now. There's still lots more to say, but hopefully, maybe, we'll have time to talk about this topic more.